Part 3. In this part, you will hear two segments from a radio program. After each segment, you will hear six questions about it. Before each segment begins, you will have time to preview the questions. You will hear each segment twice. Then you will hear the questions once. If you want to, you may take notes as you listen. You should mark A, B, or C. Do you have any questions? Look at the questions, then listen to the first segment. Now you will hear the first segment.
How many times have you heard your teenage kid plead, "Just let me sleep"? Today, psychologists realize there's a good reason for it. Here's Jack Harwell to explain.
Psychologists once thought that the erratic sleep patterns of adolescents were associated with teenage rebellion. But a lack of sleep, sleep deprivation, produces similar problems to those thought to be typical of adolescence or puberty: irritability, moodiness, poor performance in school, and low motivation. Dr. Elizabeth Baxter of the National Sleep Center has been studying teen sleep patterns. She and teen counselor David Stones are here today to shed some light on this matter. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for the invite.
Thanks, Jack.
Could you share some of the findings of your research with us, Elizabeth?
Of course. It seems that the onset of puberty causes changes in the parts of the brain that govern the sleep-wake cycle, which is our biological clock. During adolescence, this clock shifts so that if teens were allowed to create their own cycle, they would go to sleep at about 1 a.m. and wake up at about 10 in the morning. This shift in their biological clock makes it difficult for them to fall asleep earlier at night and to get all the sleep that they need for classes the following morning. In fact, teens need more sleep than young children or adults.
Why is that?
Well, the answer lies with hormones, the chemicals that promote growth and development. There is a huge surge in growth hormone production during adolescence, and these hormones are released primarily at night during deep sleep. The problem is that, according to our research, only 20% of adolescents get enough sleep on school nights. Instead of the minimum 9 hours that their bodies require, most average no more than 7.
I want to jump in here and say that the trouble is that sleep isn't optional. It's as essential as food.
Exactly.
I understand from reading your research, Elizabeth, that this lack of sleep has also been linked to an increased risk of car accidents.
That's right. Sleepy drivers can easily doze off while on the road. Of the tens of thousands of car accidents linked to drowsy drivers, statistics reveal that half involve drivers aged 16 to 24.
Wow, that is serious. David, do you see the effects of sleep deprivation in your work with adolescents?
All the time. It can lead to all sorts of problems, behavioral, psychological, and academic, of course. In addition to all its other functions, sleep plays an important part in storing long-term memory. The teen who is deprived of sleep finds it hard to pay attention at school. His school performance declines, and as a result, he feels depressed, so it becomes even more difficult to fall asleep. It's a vicious cycle.
So, what tips can we give teens, Elizabeth?
Well, here are a few ideas that can make a substantial difference. During the school week, keep the lights low in the evening to stimulate the production of the sleep hormone melatonin. Go to bed at the same time every night and wake up at the same time every morning. Then, first thing in the morning, open the curtains to let light in to help reset your biological clock. Take short naps after school if you are tired. Finally, no TV or loud music late at night. That's important.
Now you will hear the segment again.
How many times have you heard your teenage kid plead, "Just let me sleep"? Today, psychologists realize there's a good reason for it. Here's Jack Harwell to explain.
Psychologists once thought that the erratic sleep patterns of adolescents were associated with teenage rebellion. But a lack of sleep, sleep deprivation, produces similar problems to those thought to be typical of adolescence or puberty: irritability, moodiness, poor performance in school, and low motivation. Dr. Elizabeth Baxter of the National Sleep Center has been studying teen sleep patterns. She and teen counselor David Stones are here today to shed some light on this matter. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for the invite.
Thanks, Jack.
Could you share some of the findings of your research with us, Elizabeth?
Of course. It seems that the onset of puberty causes changes in the parts of the brain that govern the sleep-wake cycle, which is our biological clock. During adolescence, this clock shifts so that if teens were allowed to create their own cycle, they would go to sleep at about 1 a.m. and wake up at about 10 in the morning. This shift in their biological clock makes it difficult for them to fall asleep earlier at night and to get all the sleep that they need for classes the following morning. In fact, teens need more sleep than young children or adults.
Why is that?
Well, the answer lies with hormones, the chemicals that promote growth and development. There is a huge surge in growth hormone production during adolescence, and these hormones are released primarily at night during deep sleep. The problem is that, according to our research, only 20% of adolescents get enough sleep on school nights. Instead of the minimum 9 hours that their bodies require, most average no more than 7.
I want to jump in here and say that the trouble is that sleep isn't optional. It's as essential as food.
Exactly.
I understand from reading your research, Elizabeth, that this lack of sleep has also been linked to an increased risk of car accidents.
That's right. Sleepy drivers can easily doze off while on the road. Of the tens of thousands of car accidents linked to drowsy drivers, statistics reveal that half involve drivers aged 16 to 24.
Wow, that is serious. David, do you see the effects of sleep deprivation in your work with adolescents?
All the time. It can lead to all sorts of problems, behavioral, psychological, and academic, of course. In addition to all its other functions, sleep plays an important part in storing long-term memory. The teen who is deprived of sleep finds it hard to pay attention at school. His school performance declines, and as a result, he feels depressed, so it becomes even more difficult to fall asleep. It's a vicious cycle.
So, what tips can we give teens, Elizabeth?
Well, here are a few ideas that can make a substantial difference. During the school week, keep the lights low in the evening to stimulate the production of the sleep hormone melatonin. Go to bed at the same time every night and wake up at the same time every morning. Then, first thing in the morning, open the curtains to let light in to help reset your biological clock. Take short naps after school if you are tired. Finally, no TV or loud music late at night. That's important.
Number 39. What link does the reporter mention between lack of sleep and teenage rebellion? Number 40. What does Dr. Baxter say causes teenagers to sleep badly? Number 41. According to Dr. Baxter, how much sleep does a typical teenager need? Number 42. Which consequence of teenagers not sleeping enough is the reporter surprised by? Number 43. How does David Stones suggest sleep deprivation and poor academic performance are connected? Number 44. What advice does Dr. Baxter give to teenagers? Look at the questions, then listen to the second segment. Now you will hear the second segment.
Did you know that over the course of 1 year, as many as 2 million people in the United States may experience homelessness? That includes over 800,000 children and teenagers, Diane Peterson reports.
Homelessness is a major problem in America. The main causes are lack of affordable housing, income that is too low to pay for basic living expenses, and domestic violence. Sociology professor Frank Bridges has been investigating the impact of homelessness, especially on children. He has some disturbing news about the extent of the problem in this country and the long-term implications for those affected by it.
How have so many people lost their homes and ended up on the streets? Well, although standards of living have risen overall, 20 years ago, there were twice as many affordable housing units available as there were low-income families. Today, those numbers have reversed, and over the last few decades, housing costs have risen rapidly, but wages for low-skilled workers have remained stable. The result is that poor people are finding it extremely difficult to afford permanent housing. Although single men make up the majority of the homeless population, families, especially mothers and children, have now become the fastest-growing group of homeless people, and domestic violence has been a major contributing factor to that.
Unfortunately, homelessness has far-reaching consequences for a family, particularly for children. It's more devastating for them than it is for adults. Not only is their physical and emotional health at risk from not having a permanent home, but they also lack consistent educational opportunities. For example, if a family frequently changes neighborhoods, this disrupts the child's progress in school. Administrative delays, such as transferring school records, often prevent homeless children from enrolling in school in their new neighborhood. Another difficulty that many homeless families face is finding an affordable and reliable means of transportation for their children to get to school. So unless there's a school a short distance away and the kids can go on foot, a lot of school days are missed. This also makes it hard for these children to participate in extracurricular school programs or in social activities. It's obviously no surprise that these children consistently have lower math and reading test scores and have difficulties developing relationships within their peer group.
To try to alleviate these problems, both state and local educational agencies have been revising their laws and policies to take account of the needs of homeless children. Many districts now have a homeless liaison helping affected families work together with local schools to facilitate the enrollment process and to ensure that school attendance is as uninterrupted as possible. But much remains to be done before all homeless children have equal access to free and appropriate public education.
Now you will hear the segment again.
Did you know that over the course of 1 year, as many as 2 million people in the United States may experience homelessness? That includes over 800,000 children and teenagers, Diane Peterson reports.
Homelessness is a major problem in America. The main causes are lack of affordable housing, income that is too low to pay for basic living expenses, and domestic violence. Sociology professor Frank Bridges has been investigating the impact of homelessness, especially on children. He has some disturbing news about the extent of the problem in this country and the long-term implications for those affected by it.
How have so many people lost their homes and ended up on the streets? Well, although standards of living have risen overall, 20 years ago, there were twice as many affordable housing units available as there were low-income families. Today, those numbers have reversed, and over the last few decades, housing costs have risen rapidly, but wages for low-skilled workers have remained stable. The result is that poor people are finding it extremely difficult to afford permanent housing. Although single men make up the majority of the homeless population, families, especially mothers and children, have now become the fastest-growing group of homeless people, and domestic violence has been a major contributing factor to that.
Unfortunately, homelessness has far-reaching consequences for a family, particularly for children. It's more devastating for them than it is for adults. Not only is their physical and emotional health at risk from not having a permanent home, but they also lack consistent educational opportunities. For example, if a family frequently changes neighborhoods, this disrupts the child's progress in school. Administrative delays, such as transferring school records, often prevent homeless children from enrolling in school in their new neighborhood. Another difficulty that many homeless families face is finding an affordable and reliable means of transportation for their children to get to school. So unless there's a school a short distance away and the kids can go on foot, a lot of school days are missed. This also makes it hard for these children to participate in extracurricular school programs or in social activities. It's obviously no surprise that these children consistently have lower math and reading test scores and have difficulties developing relationships within their peer group.
To try to alleviate these problems, both state and local educational agencies have been revising their laws and policies to take account of the needs of homeless children. Many districts now have a homeless liaison helping affected families work together with local schools to facilitate the enrollment process and to ensure that school attendance is as uninterrupted as possible. But much remains to be done before all homeless children have equal access to free and appropriate public education.
Number 45. According to Frank Bridges, why are many poor people unable to afford permanent housing? Number 46. Who does Frank Bridges say is increasingly likely to become homeless? Number 47. What problem does Frank Bridges say that homeless children face? Number 48. What other difficulties do homeless children have to deal with? Number 49. What does the reporter say is being done to help homeless children get an education? Number 50. What is the main purpose of this report? End of the listening test.